Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you with us today. We're going to focus a bit on apples today on the program. We got a couple of guests for you. John Hendrickson, one of them, back with us once again. He's an outreach program manager at the Center for Integrated Ag Systems at the UW-Madison. He coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. So great to have him with us. Rami Aberomia is an organic apple grower. He owns Adams to Apples in Mount Horeb, and he's going to talk with us a bit about his business. And I know we'll be talking about the class that's coming up in the not-too-distant future here for those who are interested in especially organic growing of apples and apple trees. So we'd love great to have both of them with us. John, good to see you.
Happy to be here, Larry.
Rami, thank you for joining us as well, first-timer.
Oh, my pleasure. Good to be here.
Let me just say, if you have a question or comment for them, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And if you have a photo you want to send along, we can do certainly take a look at that as well. Maybe there may be a disease or something from the previous year that you've got a photo of you want to have our guests look at. Why, that'd be fine, too. That's at WPR.org. Love to see those as well. Rami, tell me about your business. I love the title. How'd you come up with that title? Adams to Apples.
Right. It's Atoms to Apples, A-T-O-M. Some right. people ask me if my name is Adam. And have to.
Oh, Atoms.
Atoms to Apples. It took some time to figure out a farm name, but and actually went through a couple other ones that didn't really stick for very long. But, I like it because it sticks in your head and mm-hmm. it's got a unique name. Really what, and also what farmers are really doing is they're we're kind of using a plant to take atoms out of the soil and out of the air and turn them into something that people can eat. And
you're right.
Yeah, so it kind of worked that way too.
I love that. Tell us about your business.
So I started Adams Apples started planting in 2015 and been kind of planting trees ever since then. We were certified organic 2 years after the first planting. I also grow pears and a little bit of peaches and some plums also, but those are kind of smaller aspects of the business.
We could probably talk about them too, if people had questions in those areas.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, I've got some experience there, but anyway, so the apples, there's about 35 varieties, and it's spread over about 4 acres. Where I'm located, there's a lot of hills, so it's not like one flat block of apple trees, but they're in different blocks spread out amongst the farm.
So it sounds pretty cool to me. And where are you located?
Just south of Mount Horeb, about 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that is a beautiful area of the world. And the state, for sure.
It's nice. It's steep there. It's not as steep as some parts in southwestern Wisconsin. But, yeah, we've got good hills and great soil. So,
yeah, a great place. Well, John Hendrickson, tell us about the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems.
Well, the center is the Sustainable Ag Research and Education Unit on campus. I specialize in helping specialty crop growers. Run several different schools for people who want to get started in farming. Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers is a school for vegetable growers that we first started back in 1997. We started the Apple School, I think it was 2010. Was the first Apple School, and Rami's been one of our instructors for the past several years. The schools are designed for people who want to take it, maybe they've been growing things in their backyard or on some rural property. Or they want to turn it into a business.
It's really, really cool. And the we'll talk more about the program itself because you've got this course coming up and there's still some opportunity for people to sign
Absolutely,
up.
Absolutely, though. We call it the Midwest School for Beginning Apple Growers because we do attract attendees from really around the Midwest. It's a 3-day class that we're running March 6th through 8th.
And the program is designed for?
For people who are serious about making a business out of growing apples, just like what Rami's doing.
Yeah, that is really, really cool. Well, we'll get into some more of the specifics. I think we probably have that up on our page at WPR.org/Larry. I know there's some information. It's a pretty easy website. What is it? CIAS.WISC.EDU.
That's correct.
And all the information is right there. So that is very cool. Well, you can join in with your own questions as we move along today. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@WPR.org. You know, Alex in Beaver Dam has a question that we might be able to help with, or you might be able to help with. Let's go to Alex. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question relates to an apple called a russet. I used to live in the UK. I'm English, but I've been here for about 20 years, and I've never been able to find russet apples here. And I'm wondering, is it because they can't be grown here, or am I just not looking in the right place?
So this is Rami. I can take that. There are quite a few russets grown in Wisconsin, Roxbury russet, Golden russet, Ashmead's kernel is another kind of russet. The russet category is just a category of apples that have that rough skin on them. So there's quite a few. Probably the best place to look is just your local apple orchard that might have pick your own or sell off the farm. I don't know if there's any in Beaver Dam or somewhere nearby. I'm sure there's a local apple orchard somewhere nearby there. But most of the russets seem to come in early October. So that's one thing that's pretty critical about apples. You know, there could be 200 varieties of apples grown in Wisconsin. But if you want them fresh and they're not the kind that are going to go sit in the store for a long time, you have to have kind of know your timing of when your certain variety is going to show up. So you might want to call your local apple orchards end of September and ask them if they have russets.
Yeah. Alex, does that help?
Yeah, it does. Obviously, I've not been looking hard enough, so I will look again at the end of this year. Thanks for the answer. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. Appreciate it. John, you wanted to add something?
No, I was just going to ask Rami if any of the 30 varieties that he's growing is a russet.
Yeah, so I grow Ashmead's kernel, which is probably my people always ask me, what's your favorite variety? My favorite variety is kind of the freshest one that's coming out at whatever point of the season it is. But, you know, if you're going to try to pick one, Ashmead's kernel would be one. And I grow that. I also grow Roxbury russet, which is a little more on the tart side, great cider apple. Those are two. And also actually planting some golden russets too, which is probably the most common one that you'll find in Wisconsin.
Huh.
When is the season for those different ones, Rami?
Yeah, so that's probably about the first week of October.
So there you go, Alex. Appreciate your call very much. Now you've got some good information. By the way, you have a website, Rami?
Facebook and Instagram.
Facebook and Instagram. There you go.
Yeah, Adams to Apples.
Atoms to Apples. If you type that in, you're gonna find him. Yeah, for sure. Well, again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@WPR.org. Dennis in Eau Claire emailed to ask, what's the average life of an apple tree? He has three trees that are more than 30 years old. They haven't been pruned for several years. They bloom, apples form, but then they just drop off. Can they be pruned and get some fruit, or are they too old?
So apples can live to be more than 100 years old. But
Apple trees.
But it depends a little bit on what kind of root they're on. So an apple that is on its original root is called a seedling, and that would produce a large tree. And those can live to be 100 years old or so. I think once you get into the more dwarf rootstocks and smaller trees, their lifespan might be less. So for you, Dennis, you've got a 30-year-old tree. I mean, I would say if it looks good and it's making apples, then you could start taking care of it a little more and try to get some nicer apples out of it. For pruning a tree that hasn't been pruned and taken care of for a long time, it's probably good to start out kind of slow and spend a couple years getting it into the shape that you want, thinning out some of the branches where they're too dense, and kind of just taking it easy, not doing it all in one season.
Yeah, you want those overlapping branches, kind of get rid of those somehow. At least that's a typical pruning.
Yep, response. just getting some space and light in the tree. You know,
I mean, light. You need light.
You need light and airflow. You know, the thing of being able to throw a cat through an apple tree and it come out on the other side. That's kind of what you're. That's the kind of light and space you're looking for.
Or maybe we should say
a football.
Well, I like that image though. I can see that. I've got two cats. They probably wouldn't mind being. Well, Coco wouldn't mind. Tiger might if I threw him through the apple tree. Let's go to Cheryl in Verona now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I was at the Moses Conference several years ago at an apple-specific discussion. And the speaker recommended that if you have an existing older orchard, not to add new stock that would be, I think, disease or some resistance that they had in Minnesota had developed. And I'm wondering if that is still the case, or if we wanted to add them, would we put them in a different area than the existing orchards at?
Rami?
Yep. Let's see. I guess it depends what it is you're adding and what you have there. But I think maybe the problem you're thinking of is if you had some old trees that had some diseases and things, you'd be afraid of those spreading to your new trees. That is possible, but it kind of depends specifically on what the disease problem is that you might that you might have. And the same could be for insects, that if you have a big insect problem, that they'll move to your new trees. But whether the trees are 20 feet from each other or 150 feet, it's probably not going to make that much difference.
Yeah. Cheryl, does that help?
Well, yeah, and I know the resistance they were talking about was something that was that they had created, and I don't recall if it was disease specifically or insect. And our orchard is probably 30 to 40 years old. It's the old farm that these trees are here when we moved here, and so we use them for cider making and things like that. But they're not pretty apples. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah,
they're not something that you'd seek out, but they are actually are sort of heirloom and very delicious in terms of what they provide for us.
Yeah.
There doesn't really exist any insect resistant apple varieties, but there are disease resistant apple varieties, and for the most part, they're resistant to scab, which is a fungal disease that happens kind of in the earlier part of the season.
And the worst, you don't want apple scab.
You don't want apple scab. That can spread from 0 to 1,000 in one rainy season, which seems to be what we have now.
Yeah. So there you go, Cheryl. Thank you so much for calling. And Mary in Milwaukee will give you a chance. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, what is the certifying agency that you're certified organic through? My next question is, have a retail outlet on your property, and my next question is, what outlets are you selling your products in?
Thanks,
Mary. So there's a lot of certifying agencies. They're private third party organizations. I use MOSA, which is out of Viroqua, Wisconsin, but there's a lot of other ones.
MOSA?
Yeah.
It stands for Midwest Organic Services Association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where I sell through a couple different outlets. I sell at a couple farmers markets, one in Madison, one in Mount Horeb, also to all the Willie Street co-ops in Madison, and then also as kind of an add-on for some vegetable CSAs that are in the Madison area.
Cool. And Mary, does that help?
Well, did you have a retail outlet on your property that you
know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't. That's possibly in the works, but yeah, not yet.
Okay. All right. That answers all my questions. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with John Hendrickson, Outreach Program Manager for the Center for Integrated Agriculture Systems at UW-Madison, and Rami Abaromia, an apple grower and owner of Atoms to Apples in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Questions for them, give us a call, the number 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. As I said, we're concentrating a bit on apples, but I think we could get into pears or maybe a bit into raspberries or pumpkins as well, maybe even. John knows all about those, too. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, always does a great job, as does Jill Nadeau, our producer. So fun to have them with us as well in this conversation. And what about you? You want to join in? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. John, I want to go back to the course that's coming up again. Just name that course, and sure. It's for, could be organic or non-organic, I believe.
That's correct, Larry. So it's the Midwest School for Beginning Apple Growers. It's a 3-day workshop that we run on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be March 6th through 8th. And we have experienced growers like Rami as instructors, as well as our fruit team specialist, extension specialist from campus, come in and give talks. This year, we're going to have a series of special guests of apple growers coming in and doing short presentations, overviews of their farms, so that we expose the participants to a wide range of businesses in terms of what people are doing, what people are growing, how they're selling, and you know what it takes to make a successful business out of it.
Yeah, that sounds really great. And to find out more, sign up. There's a cost associated with it, of course.
Yeah, you mentioned our website earlier, Larry, ciias.wisc.edu. There's a tab to click on training programs, and you can find the Apple School there.
Yeah, I went on it just before the show, and it's nice, quick, easy to find everything.
Yep, registration's open, and we've got spots.
All right.
The class is held here on the UW-Madison campus, I should add.
Yeah, so you may need to travel a little bit, but well worth the you've had great response in the past from this.
Absolutely, and people get tremendous information out of the program, hearing from growers who are in it and in it for many years, so you can not repeat the same mistakes. Although, I don't know, my experience is that mistakes are kind of part of starting any business, let alone a farm business. It's almost impossible to avoid making some.
Rami, do you want to tell us what your big mistake was that you had when you first started?
Big, yeah, so many mistakes. where to start? Well, I guess I could. So when I started this farm, I picked my 30 so varieties of what I wanted. I used to work on and manage a different farm in the Madison area that was, it was IPM, Integrated Pest Management, meaning we still monitor all the pests and spray what's necessary, but it was conventionally managed with those materials. But one of the apples that I loved there was Ginger Gold, which is an early yellow apple, and I tried planting it at my place under organic management, but it just was a pest and disease magnet. So, while I've gotten some crops off of the Ginger Gold, I really have decided it's not worth growing. So I'm cutting those out, and actually able to it's called top working, which is if you have a tree that you don't like, you can cut it and graft a new variety onto the top of it and start getting that variety to grow. So that's kind of what a plan for the next early spring here.
The varieties and rootstock issue is a really important one that many beginners don't fully understand. And the very first year that we ran this program, we had a unit on selecting varieties and putting them on the right rootstocks. And there was a participant who dashed out of the room in the middle of this presentation, and we wondered if there was an emergency. It turns out there kind of was an emergency. He had rushed out to the hall, out into the hall to make a phone call to cancel his order from a nursery because he had made inappropriate choices in terms of varieties and rootstocks. And so he went out to cancel an order that he placed.
There we go. Well, we have every line's full here. So let's go back to the phones for a minute. Esther in Mequon, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hello. I read once that you don't have to water apple trees during a drought. Is this true? And my second question is, do wood ashes do anything for an apple tree?
Hey, Esther. You know, I would say it depends on your soils and things. I think that if you really have dry soils, the apple tree is going to be happy to have some water when it's really starting to dry out. So, you know, this is actually something that farmers are often neglect doing, but take a shovel out and dig in the soil and see what's really going on there, just to see how dry it is. And then, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but just letting the water run under the tree for a while would probably help out. You know, at my orchard, I have irrigation. I've turned it on once in 2 years because of how much water we've been getting. But droughts still will happen, hopefully.
And just thinking about the roots for a minute, the root systems on most apple trees are relatively shallow, aren't they? I mean, they're within a foot.
It depends on the rootstock. So if you have a bigger tree, it's got a bigger root, and that's got more ability to pull water out of the soil. If you have a dwarf variety, then for sure you need to be more on the watering and the tender, loving care.
So if you got one dwarf in the backyard or two, if you get a drought, sir, you better be watering.
Those you want to water, yep. Yeah. I mean, that's more almost like a vegetable, like a tomato plant or something.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Esther, thanks. Appreciate it. Diane in La Crosse, your turn.
Hey, I have a cousin. Well, actually, she's a second cousin. She lives in Cambridge, Minnesota. And when I went to visit her, her apple trees all had little Ziploc baggies on them. And I looked at the tree and I go, oh my gosh, what's with your tree? And she says, well, that prevents bugs and infestations, and we don't use chemicals on anything in our garden. Had you heard of that?
I have.
Rami, yeah. Go ahead.
And actually they do this in
Japan?
I can't remember. Japan, where they bag apples, and that keeps the pests and disease off the trees. And that's actually what I tell my mom to do with her one apple tree, and she successfully gets some crops off of it. So, I think if you have a tree or two and have some patience, then I think that's a great, great way to do it. And some people make bags out of pantyhose or cloth bags, and then you can use them year after year.
And thanks very much for calling. What do you do? Diane in La Crosse, hello. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm still here. What time do you put the bags on?
Yeah, so there's actually a pest called Plum Curculio that can take a bite out of your apple when it's about the size of a pea. So if you feel like that causes kind of a crescent shape scar on the apple. If you want to get apples that don't have that scar on there, then you're going to have to get the bag on there really early. Otherwise, you could wait until the apple is maybe about the size of your thumbnail or so, and then you'll just want to leave it on almost until the end of the season. And, you know, you could take it off when you're getting into August so it starts to redden up, turn red a little bit.
There you go. Does that help? Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's see. Let's take a call from Thayer in the Florida Keys. Hi, Thayer.
Hi. Actually, I live in Tomahawk, Wisconsin, and listening to your program and want to call in.
Okay.
I have a Golden Delicious and a Honey Gold that mature rather late this season, and I have problems with sooty blotch. And I have done extensive inside trimming, hoping that that would help, but that doesn't seem to deter the problem that I'm having. Wondering if there's a product or something or a spraying regimen that I need to do on those.
And maybe first, Rami, if you're going to talk about this, do you know sooty blotch?
Yes, I know sooty blotch. and those varieties are kind of notorious for getting pretty – they're both yellow varieties. So the sooty blotch, which kind of looks like just a grayish look on them. You know, it doesn't do anything for the inside of the apple. You can still eat it, still tastes fine. You can actually scrub all that sooty blotch off there with just a wet rag or even your T-shirt. In terms of how to keep that off, so airflow is the best thing. The worst thing for sooty blotch is wet summers and wet falls, which is what we've had lately. So chemical wise, there's something, it's a potassium bicarbonate, which is kind of a relative of baking soda, which is pretty non-toxic and easy to work with, and that does help for sooty blotch.
Yeah. But you want to keep your tree going. We kind of go back to pruning here again.
Yep. Right? Yeah, keeping the tree open. But, you know, Thayer said that he's done that and trying to keep it open. The other thing is really having some space in between apples, so not having two or three apples in a kind of a cluster all touching each other, but thinning the apples out so that the crop has an apple and then your next apple will be, you know, 8 inches or a foot away from the other one. So there's some air space in between them.
And does that help the apples that are remaining? Do they grow better or bigger or anything else?
All that stuff. Yeah, they grow bigger and they taste the some varieties. If there's too many apples on the tree, they won't even mature to ripen to a nice flavor. So thinning out and that's also really important for having the crop again next year. You know, some people who don't thin their apples will get a huge crop 1 year, no crop the next year, and it kind of turns biennial like that. If you thin them out so that you have a moderate crop every year, you can get a more consistent crop year to year.
Yeah. Thayer, thanks again. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Mark in Richland Center now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Can you tell me, what do you do for organic strategies for fungal infections? I'm looking at the use of 20 mule team borax in the world of keeping fungal growth down on wood. Carpenters use it and people use it to keep wood from rotting, and wood rot is a fungal thing. And my brother tells me that his father-in-law says that using 20 mule team borax on the lawn will stop the infestation of creeping Charlie. So I don't know what the mechanism is, but it's got a high pH and it's got boron. And I'm wondering if those would help on a fungal question, since it does in the world of wood.
Yeah, boron is the key thing there, I believe. I'm not positive, Rami.
So boron can actually be a little can actually be toxic in high amounts.
Yeah.
So you want to know how much you're putting on there, pounds of boron. Boron does have a place in helping the trees make flowers year to year. So they kind of boost the health of the flowers for the next year if the tree has enough boron. But I think and there's a lot of different fungal diseases. If you're talking about scab, you know, probably the best thing to do is have scab-resistant varieties, and then you don't have to worry about that disease. If you've already got trees planted, then you got what you got. The best thing you can do is make sure there's no leaves left on the ground for the next spring, which that means if raking them up and mowing. So for scab, the there, let's say you go back a year, the scab is on the leaves, it falls down in fall, and then they overwinter on the leaves and come back up in the spring, and that's what reinfects your tree year to year. So if you can destroy all those leaves or get them out of there, then you get rid of your inoculum for the next year. For organic materials, you know, kind of the most common one is sulfur. And that's probably the easiest thing to use. The potassium bicarbonate, the kind of baking soda relative, is also something that could be used.
And just as an aside, Mark mentioned 20 mealtine borax on lawns, and I can recall a listener from Iowa calling the show to tell me to get rid of Creeping Charlie. She put some on her lawn, and she didn't follow the directions that the University of Iowa had laid out for it, and killed her whole lawn. She had no lawn at all.
Wow, yeah.
And then it's in the soil for a bit, too.
Wow, yeah.
So you're not it's not a good thing to fool around with.
Yeah, for rates and things like that, it's, you know, look up some of your extension type guidelines.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the University of Iowa had some recommendations when it came to borax type solutions, but we don't have them here because I think we're a little, aren't we, John, a little nervous about, well, you may not know that. I think it's not a necessarily a recommended thing.
That would be correct.
That would be correct for sure. Larry called to ask if for help in controlling apple scabs organically, and I know you've talked a little bit about, you know, getting varieties that are resistant to scab. Beyond that, getting the leaves out,
having a well-pruned tree, so there's air and drying going on in there. You know, for someone in their backyard tree, and you've got scab every year, and it's one of the worst. If it is a variety, that's one of the worst scab varieties, which tends to be a Macintosh, which a lot of people have. And you really are tired of dealing with scab, you know, maybe it's time to get rid of that tree and plant some scab-resistant ones. There's actually a really nice scab-resistant apple called Liberty that is a lot like a Macintosh, and you can eat it when it's fresh and bake with it, and yeah, it's a good option.
What are some other good scab-resistant varieties, Rami?
Good scab-resistant varieties. So a lot of these were developed in the 70s and 80s, I believe, by some kind of consortium, including Purdue and some other universities. And so kind of going through the season, the earliest one would be Pristine. That comes about the beginning of August, and that's a great yellow apple. There's Liberty, Crimson Crisp. There is Wine Crisp. Gold Rush is one of the latest ones. But, you know, if people want to look and find these apples, just use the computer and search for scab-resistant apple varieties, and you'll get a whole list of them.
There we go. I appreciate the calls and questions that have been coming in. If you have one for us, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. John in Mayville, we'll give you a chance. Hi, John.
Hi. I've become very interested in mason bees and their pollination success and how they can complement honeybees, actually. So I'm curious if you have any experience with mason bees or what other techniques you use for the honeybee pollination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks, John. So for where my farm is in a diverse ecological area. So, you know, there's oak savanna and there's prairie around. There's actually a beekeeper right around the corner. So I don't have to do anything for pollination yet. I see a lot of honeybees, a lot of bumblebees, wild pollinators and things on all the flowers. So I haven't had to do anything.
And it's not only bees that pollinate, right? Aren't there other insects that will pollinate?
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, at what point a bee turns into something else. You know,
I think the point that you raise, though, with some diversity around you, that is always going to be a benefit.
That's going to be huge. And, you know, even if, you know, we have a part of the farm that we actually burn and have been seeding with prairie plants, and that's full of flowers, and it kind of allows these pollinators to come in, the apples and dandelions are one of the first things, but having other plants around keeps the pollinators around, and so that they can be around for the next year. So,
yeah, even Creeping Charlie in the early spring. That's the first pollinating plant practically in the spring, as a matter of fact. Oh, my goodness me. Well, let's see. John, I thank you very much for that call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Ann in Amory next. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. I have an apple tree, and I'm out and about right now, and I don't remember the name of it, but it's an early apple. And it when I bite into it, it has a, like the center of it, it's just all spoiled. It's like there would be describing a worm that would go into it and make it mushy. And I've had this 2 years in a row now, and it was a new tree. And I'm wondering if there's a spray or something that I could do to prevent this.
Now, did you see worms in the?
No, I did not.
Okay, because it could be something else.
Yep. And so you're not picking the apples too late, and they're mushy because they've just been on the tree too long. Like you feel like they're.
That's a good question. Being said it's a new apple and I'm not used to one so early, perhaps that I was waiting too long.
What do you know? So, what variety it is?
That's what I would like to be able to share. I'm out in the car.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I would say you could try to pick some a little earlier. You know, how do you know whether an apple is ready to pick or not? The one way is the first time one falls on the ground, then maybe you need to go out there and take a look. If you take an apple and cut it open and the seeds are turning brown or all brown, then those apples are pretty much ready to pick. So that can start to give you a hint of when it's ready. If it is an insect, it's possible that it could be apple maggot. That sounds like something that could be. It's the maggot of the fly, apple maggot fly, is really little and you won't see it in there. But if it's also called the railroad worm. So if you cut your apples open maybe before it gets all rotten and you see a railroady, long, swiggly pattern inside your apple, then that's what that would be, apple maggot.
Ah, there you go. Ann, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Having some fun today talking about apples. We've zeroed in on them today. Well, lots of great questions and calls from our listeners, and our two guests are doing a good job of answering. John Hendrickson, Program Manager at the Center for Integrated Ag Systems at UW-Madison, and Rami Abaromia is an organic apple grower, and he owns Adams to Apples in the Mount Horeb area. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You know, there's a great game that was invented right here in Wisconsin, I believe in Madison. It's called Apples to Apples. Have you ever played it? It's a fun game to play. We're not playing it on the show today on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. But we are talking a lot about apples with our two guests, John Hendrickson, who manages the Center for Integrated Ag Systems, the program manager there, outreach program manager. And he coordinates the School for Beginning Market Growers, a program for people wanting to start small-scale organic farms and actually non-organic as well, because you've got an apple conference or an apple school coming up that we'll talk some more about with him as we move along here today. One of the teachers or instructors at that conference, at that school, is Rami Abaromia. He's with me in the studio as well, an organic apple grower. He owns Adams to Apples in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Darlene and Viola, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I actually thought of a third question, but I'll make these brief. Every spring, my apple trees are inundated with rose chafers. What is the best organic pesticide to get rid of these nasties? Number one. Number two, what is the best pollinator for a variety of dwarf apple trees that I have, which include Lodi, Liberty, Enterprise, Freedom, and a few others I can't remember the names of? Mm-hmm. And thirdly, what is the best fertilizer for apple trees? Organic.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Darlene. So we got three things. Rose chafers. I wonder if, are you sure they're rose chafers? Because I didn't know that rose chafers attacked apple trees.
Tell you the truth, I don't know what a rose chafer is. And
they attack roses, okay. For sure. But Darlene, yeah. Are you sure about that?
I am 100% positive. I've been a gardener for almost 40 years. I know what rose chafers are.
Okay.
And so what damage do they do to the trees? Is it on the fruit or on the actual tree?
No, they will chew up the leaves, and they will cut into the apples themselves. I used to have a vineyard, and I have raspberries, so I know that these bugs, they come and visit me every June. By the end of June, they're gone, and the damage is done.
Yeah.
I don't really have an answer. I guess if...
I tell you what, I can give you some ideas, some advice. The Insect Diagnostic Lab at the UW, if you put in UW Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, PJ Leash, that's his job, is to answer questions like the one you have relating to rose chafers on apples. And if you can just go online, UW Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. There's a way to email him, and I just about guarantee you'll get an answer back in 2 or 3 days. He's really quick about it. So that sort of deals with that. Well, what about what are the best pollinators for trees like Lodi and so forth?
Yeah, those are going to be either honeybees or any of the other native bees. So just having habitat for native bees to be around. And, you know, if you're interested in bees, you could get have a hive there to bring honeybees in. The weakness with honeybees is that they're real picky about when they fly. So if it's windy, they won't tend to fly very much. If it's cold, they won't fly. And that's where your native pollinators can really do well, is that they can fly in colder temperatures and windier temperatures and things. So, yeah, so good to have as much of a mix as you can there.
And what about organic fertilization for apple trees?
Yep. So it depends on your soils. If you have, heavy, rich soils, you probably need very little to do for your apples. And if anything, maybe you would want to put a little fertilizer on for the first year or two to grow the tree. I use composted poultry manure, but really small amounts. And, it's almost less to try to give a bunch of nutrients to the tree as to feed some of the soil bacteria and things that are in there. And, maybe even for breaking down some of the apple leaves that are on the ground. So composted poultry manure is what I use, but there's a number of them. I think the thing to, you could do a soil test, see what you're missing, if you even need to fertilize. And, the other way is to look at how much growth you have on your tree in a given year. If you've got 2 or 3 feet of growth in a year, you probably don't need any
nitrogen.
Any nitrogen for sure. Now, if it's 6 inches, then yeah, it's a different story.
Yeah, and this, and if you even get out there now and take a soil test, that wouldn't hurt a bit because you get really quick responses this time of the year. But the soil and plant analysis laboratory is a good place to go. If you go online to the soil and plant analysis laboratory, they have directions on, you know, how to do it, and it really is worth a few bucks. And you can specify, I've got apple trees, I would like to do this organically, tell me what I need to add to my soil.
It's
a great way to go. And thanks a lot for calling. Jay in Plum City, hello to you.
Hi there. How are you doing, guys?
Good. Appreciate it.
My question has to do with hardiness zone ratings. I'm in a zone 4B, and a lot of the apples that look interesting to me are, like, rated as fives. Oh, Crimson Crisp, for example. Now, to further confuse it, one seed catalog will rate an apple maybe as a four. Another one will say it's a five. It's not, like, a consistent hardiness thing. So I guess my question is it worth trying these zone five ones rated in 4B?
You know, I'll tell you one thing. There are, you know, those zones are a general, you know, description of what may or may not work, John.
Right, and they're changing.
Yeah, they're changing all the time. Especially lately, the last many years.
Exactly, and we're only going to get warmer in our various zones, and so our zones are changing all the time. You know, the answer to why they're different from catalog to catalog is, you know, in large part, I think some of these catalogs may just, you know, be trying to expand
cheat
the market,
a little bit.
Trying to expand the market for different varieties that they're trying to sell. And. And things can be so variable from location to location. I mean, you could have an apple tree in a little tiny microclimate near your house, and that would be very different than, you know, one up on a ridgetop or in a frost pocket. So there's so many variables there. I guess I would just err on being slightly conservative, especially if you're going to buy something in quantity. You know, if you're only buying one or two, you know, maybe it's not a big deal. Yeah, go ahead and try it. But if you were, you know, certainly if you were a commercial grower, before you invested in hundreds of trees, you'd want to either find out from other growers whether it's an appropriate variety for your area, or, you know, buy one or two to test and see how they do before investing in more trees.
And thanks for calling. John in Dodgeville, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just calling as a backyard apple grower. I've got 4 apple trees. I'm just wondering if you could provide some advice, like the top 5 things a backyard apple grower should do.
Good question. Got 5 things?
5 things.
Prune would be one.
Prune would be, yeah, starting from now, it'd be to get it pruned so that, like we were talking about, getting the airflow through there and good drying.
And when does that pruning take place, Tommy?
Right now.
Pruning can take place right now. And, you know, some people worry that once the apple starts to, or once the tree starts growing and budding out, that it's done, you can't prune anymore. So, but that's not really true. You can really keep pruning, even maybe up till bloom or so, and then you probably want to quit, but it's okay to prune late. So that's one thing. The other would be thinning your crop. So just making sure you don't leave too many apples on the tree from year to year. Talked about that a bit. You know, at that point, it kind of just depends how much effort you want to put into sprays or, you know, either for insects or pests. So you can turn that 5 things into 50 things of the things you need to do to get a great apple crop at the end of the year. So it's hard to know without what, you know, so maybe the way to go is to just look at what your worst two or three problems are. Do a little research on that to see how you can limit those problems, and then go from there. I guess then if you want to get to harvest, probably what I see people doing is maybe leaving apples on the tree too long. If you want to store the apples for a little bit, you got to get them off the tree a little earlier. If you just want to pick them and eat them within 2 or 3 weeks, then you can pick them at kind of their perfect timing.
I think the other one is scab resistant varieties. If you're planting now,
yeah, for sure.
And I tell you what, that's a good. I'll ponder some more about that. Maybe we can talk about that. Our guest today on the show, John Hendrickson, Outreach Manager for the Center for Integrated Ag Systems at UW-Madison, coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. Go to cias.wisc.edu for that class that's coming up in early March. Rami Arbaromia is an organic apple grower. He owns Adams to Apples in Mount Horeb. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we talk apples with our two guests, John Hendrickson. He is the Outreach Program Manager at the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. And also talking today with Rami Arbaromia, who is an organic apple grower. He owns Atoms to Apples in Mount Horeb. So great to have both of them with us. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll get to the phones in just a minute, but I want to go back to an earlier caller. We talked a bit about pruning, and maybe, Rami, you can talk a bit more about pruning or where people can find more information.
Yep. So there are quite a few extension publications on pruning. Growing apples in Wisconsin is one from UW here. So pruning is, it's an art and a science. But in general, if you have we were talking about this earlier, if you have a larger tree, you really don't want to try to prune. And it hasn't been pruned well for some number of years. You really don't want to prune it all in 1 year, get everything out that you want out of there in 1 year. And that's because every time you make a pruning cut on a tree, generally the tree responds with more vigor and growth. So you kind of have to balance the wood that you want to take out versus the tree's kind of desire to fill that space up with more leaves and trees and branches, leaves and branches. So kind of getting an old tree back into shape, you want to see that as like a 3 or 4 year plan, really.
And you want to get rid of the vertical ones, don't you? Don't you want more horizontal branching?
Yep. So fruit buds are produced on branches that are horizontal. When a branch is coming out at like a 45-degree angle or flat at a 90-degree angle, those whatever buds are on there will be more likely to turn into fruit buds and then create fruit. If a branch is straight up and down, then it'll stay vegetative and just kind of keep growing up without putting any fruit on it, which will then help to bend it down. So you do need a little bit of vertical growth in there. What that vertical growth is telling the rest of the tree is that here I'm vertical. The rest of you guys down there don't need to be vertical also. So it's kind of sending signals down to the rest of the tree that we have a central leader. That's kind of what that top leader is that tells the rest of the tree to take it easy. You guys can produce fruit. I'm being the leader here. Whereas if you have no vertical leaders, everything can try to become more of a leader that way. So so keeping one up at the top to be a vertical and maybe cutting out some of those other vertical shoots around in the tree, or another great way is to just tie those branches down. You know, you could tie them down with string. You could also take the branch and tuck it under another branch. This was something I learned from one of the other growers at the fruit school, the apple growing school, an apple grower who was had way more experience than I did, but just to take those branches and tuck them under another branch so that they're more horizontal after, you know, a couple weeks of growing, those will harden into that position. And then now that that branch can start to become fruitful.
Hmm. Lots of good tips there. Dean in Harper's Ferry, Iowa. We'll go to you now. Hi, Dean.
Good morning or good afternoon. I have a question regarding fire blight. It seems that my Honeycrisp apple trees seem to be very susceptible to that, and I've tried a number of different things, but it's a great apple, but I hate to keep buying trees every 4 or 5 years because I lose them to fire blight. So I'm trying to figure out how to manage fire blight amongst all the other apple trees that I have.
Do we have an apple variety that tastes kind of like Honeycrisp that is also resistant to fire blight? that's a question, I guess.
There's various levels of resistance to fire blight. I'm not sure that I know any that are completely resistant. Maybe Red Delicious, but that's not quite a Honeycrisp. But yeah, so Dean, I don't know what you've been doing for fire blight, but generally cutting out or actually ripping out any fire blight strikes that you see when they happen. You can also use a dormant application of copper. Helps a lot for fire blight. I don't really think of Honeycrisp as a super susceptible variety to fire blight. So that's interesting that it's gotten bad there. But I don't know if your tree is really – also, if a tree is really vigorous with a lot of growth, that will make it more susceptible to fire blight. So if you have been applying fertilizers, then I would stop doing that. And really just keep on taking those strikes out of the orchard and getting rid of them. And maybe a dormant application of copper.
All right. Thank you so much, Dean. Appreciate the call. David in Milwaukee. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a younger Golden Delicious, and I thinned them out, and then I did the plastic bag method, and I vented the plastic bags. And the apples, I mean, they looked beautiful, and they were awesome, and they tasted great. But when I pulled them from the tree, and then after about a week or two of just being in the house, like storing them, some of them started kind of turning, I don't know, they kind of deflated on themselves, and they kind of turned, I don't know, leathery or whatever, and then like the texture of them was almost kind of like cardboard or styrofoam. But if you cut off those parts, the inside of the apple, was they were still good. I tried taking a few of them and sticking them into the fridge,
yep,
to try and see if that would kind of stop that, but it didn't. It seemed like it slowed the process, but they still did that. The only thing that I thought of, you know, the apple tree did seem like it did have some apple cedar rust, so I don't know if that affected the fruit, or if it was maybe I just picked them too late, or if it had something to do with the plastic bags. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the plastic bags would affect the skin, but that does, you know, one thing, you could take those plastic bags off since a Golden Delicious isn't ready to pick until mid or late October. You know, you could take those bags off, so maybe the skins will kind of harden off a little bit outside for a couple weeks before you pick them. Also, apples need to be stored in the cold. So I'm not sure if you're just storing them on the countertop at room temperature, but really if you want to keep them for really any length of time 5 days or more, they should go in the fridge.
Yeah, and especially Golden Delicious does not keep, at least my own experience, mm-hmm. if you leave it out.
They can get soft, yeah.
They get soft in a hurry.
Right.
All of my apples are in a crisper in the fridge.
That's a good spot for them.
That's where I keep them. But I eat a couple of apples every single day, as a matter of fact, with lunch. I always have two couple of apples. So there you go, David. Thank you so much. Mike in Hudson, your turn.
Thank you for your program. Really appreciate it. And I'd like to contribute a soil test that I found Lamont, well, not just I, but my consultants, Lamont method using the Morgan extract. I get a whole different reading on calcium, copper, and many of the minerals. And going back to the man that was ahead of me here, the fire blight, you know, the funguses, the cells can be stronger if they have more calcium, of course, and copper. It took me 10 years to get a soccer field strong enough in copper to defend itself against the funguses, along with the copper and maybe a couple other elements that I was my soils were very deficient in. And then if you'd like, I can... One company that does that kind of test a little more often, if you'd like to give you that website.
Sure.
That's Ag Labs, A-G Lab with an S, .com. But other soil test companies do it also. But you have to kind of specify it, I understand. And they do, but, you know, 30, 20 tests on different minerals. Of course, the organic... grade is just a color test, but the other test, pH is not important because Mother Nature will balance pH if she has the elements to work with, is their philosophy.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. So aglabs.com is one, and I think the UW plant and the Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory will do micronutrients, and, you know, they'll do pretty much whatever you want.
Yep.
There's a varying cost, I think, depending on what you want. But that's good to remember. Thank you so much. Kathy and O'Connell, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions.
Okay.
One, can you recommend a couple good books to get or read about growing apples organically in Wisconsin or at least the Midwest? And then number two, might you have any insight on why all the apples fall off my Hudson Golden Gems every year?
So when do they fall off?
Well, they get to be probably the size of a quarter or larger, and then gradually during the course of the summer, they just all fall off.
And has this been going on for quite a while?
Yes.
I mean, like 10 years?
Oh, maybe 5 years.
5 years? Okay.
Just go backwards. I think, Kathy, if the apples are falling off when they're quarter size, I'm guessing they probably have plum curculio strikes on them. So I don't know if you've looked at them carefully and see that there's some kind of damage with them. But I'm thinking that those are probably that's probably plum curculio that are attacking those apples, and that's why they're falling off. So what you want to do, the problem is that the plum curculio has probably laid an egg in there. The apples fall to the ground, and now the larva is pupated in there and gone into the soil, then will come back up the next year. So what I just recommend is start collecting those apples that are falling off the trees, and you can't compost them. You really want to destroy them destroy mine by just leaving them in a bucket and letting them kind of ferment in there, and I figure that's going to kill everything that's in there. But
black plastic bag would work too.
That would probably heat it up, yeah. So that's plum curculio. For the books, you know, I really like Michael Phillips has a series of books about growing organic apples. There's not too many other books that I can think of off the top of my head, but I am part of an organization called the Organic Fruit Growers Association. We have a website, So it's Organic Fruit Growers Association. And we're kind of a upper Midwest or Midwest in general group of apple and other fruit growing people. And there's a lot of talk through listservs, and we have a newsletter, and we have retreats that we do every couple years. So so there's a lot of sharing that goes on there about how we do what we do. And yeah.
So there you go. And it was Michael Phillips as for the books.
Yep. He's got a great couple of books. His first one, I think, is called The Apple Grower. And that one's really just goes into the basics of pests and diseases. And he's got a real kind of holistic look on things, not just this pest, this spray, but, you know, what are the things that are going on. And he also spends a lot of time on how to take care of your understory under trees that can help promote the tree's health.
So there you go, Kathy. Thank you so much for calling. Jan in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I have a baby Liberty apple tree. I bought it as a grafted sapling, and this is its second winter in the ground. It amazed me this past year with a magnificent crop of full-sized apples, but it's less than 5 feet tall. And I'm wondering if it has a lot of apple buds this spring, you know, little tiny baby apples, should I prune some of them off so some of the energy goes into building the trunk and the branches? And when should I start pruning it?
You got it, Jan. Yeah, so... when the tree, I don't know what kind of rootstock it is or how big you expect this tree to be, but you obviously want to get it bigger than 5 feet so it can start to hold more apples than it can when it's 5 or 6 feet tall. But the first couple years, you maybe only want to allow no apples the first year. The second year, maybe 5 apples. You know, if the trees look healthy and still growing, next year might be 15. But shouldn't have any more than that. And, you know, for this year, you can go ahead and let it – you can do a little bit of pruning, maybe just the 3 or 4 cuts on the tree. But otherwise, once the flowers start to come off, then you could just pick off the flowers or pick off the apples when they're as small as you can kind of see them and feel them, and maybe just allow 10 apples or so on there.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. John, I want to go back to the school again that you've got coming up. Talk a bit more about that for those who may be just tuning in.
Sure. I also wanted a crack at the person called earlier about asking for book recommendations.
Ah.
This isn't exactly a book, but our federal government has a program called the National Center for Appropriate Technology, and they have – a lot of different publications on a wide variety of agricultural topics, including organic apple growing. And so you can get a PDF. I think the download costs a little bit of money because they're
not
always
much.
Strapped for funding. But yeah. I think it's like $6 to get a guide on organic apple growing from National Center for Appropriate Technology.
National Center
NCAT.
For Appropriate. Okay. Yeah. NCAT. Okay. Yeah.
The grower school. Oh, sorry, Rami.
Well, it just reminded me too. Also, Cornell has put out a pretty nice size publication too on organic apple growing, and it's more of a extension type thing more than a book, but that's got a lot of good information in it.
Yeah, thanks. I was actually trying to find that, but I couldn't find it on my computer during the interlude here. So our grower school, it's the Midwest School for Beginning Apple Growers. It's a 3-day program that we're running March 6th through 8th this year. We try to run these programs every year. Every once in a while, we take a year off. It's held here at the UW-Madison campus. It features experienced growers as our primary instructors with other special speakers coming in to talk about specific topics. Our fruit extension team specialists come in and give presentations. But it's about what it takes to get started and to manage a successful business growing and selling apples. So if that's what you want to try to do, this is a good place to learn what you know, learn what you don't know.
Yeah, there you go. And it's the website is CIAS www.wisc.edu.
Correct. And then there's a tab to click on our training programs, and you can learn more about it there. And there's a click to our link to register.
And I had an email that I really wanted to get to. Terry and Robert's email, a family farmer, they have a couple old apple trees. She found no comparison in terms of baking. They're the greatest baking apples she's ever had. How hard is it to clone an apple tree? These trees are really old.
Yeah, cloning a tree is what you do with apples. So you don't plant seeds, which, you know, if you took a Honeycrisp or if you took a seed from your old apple tree and planted it when it grew into a tree that had fruit, the fruit would be different from what you started with. And that's because you don't really know what came in to pollinate that flower, which then made the seed. So to clone your tree, what you want to do is get some rootstock, which you can look on the internet and find some rootstock. There should be some information too from the nursery about the rootstock on how large the tree is expected to get with a given rootstock. So if you want a large tree, you'd get a certain rootstock like an M7 that's going to grow a bigger tree, or a Bud 9 is a rootstock that grows a smaller tree. So you need to make a decision there. And then there's plenty of resources out there to learn how to graft. And so you can go out now and grab some 1 year new growth sections from your tree and kind of wrap them in some wet paper towels and in a bag and put them in the back of the refrigerator. Those can wait there until spring when you're ready to graft and you've learned all you need to know about grafting. I would recommend probably if you want two trees, then maybe you buy 5 rootstocks. And since it's your first time, then you'll get a 40%. If you get a 40% take, you'll be doing pretty well. So,
perfect way to do it.
Yeah. And that will basically clone your tree and you'll have the same tree that you had, your big tree that you had before.
And John, you were going to add something.
Well, I feel bad that my email isn't up because there's actually a grafting workshop taking place in the state, and I don't have the details in my head, and I can't.
Who is the sponsor?
I don't remember. But if you search for Grafting Workshop Wisconsin, I would bet you'll find it.
It's almost sure to come up. All right. Well, I tell you what, this has been a lot of fun. I want to thank you both very much for coming by today. I hope we have a chance to do this again. It was a lot of fun. And thank you so much. Rami Abaromia. I was pronouncing it right most of the day, but somehow I just missed up a little bit. But Atoms to Apples. And if you type that in a search engine, you're going to get something pop up, right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And John Hendrickson, good to see you again, too.
Always a pleasure, Larry. Thanks.
John, of course, is a program outreach manager for the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. That was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I hope you did as well. Next week on Garden Talk, Patty Nagai will be with us to help with your gardening questions. Back from retirement for a bit. And on Monday, our physical therapists are with us for an hour. Thanks for listening. Hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.